What I'd like to do today in the seminar is to explore the concept of urban citizenship and how it articulates with notions of entitlement, security and belonging for Britain's Muslim population, particularly in the context of new migration from Eastern Europe. Now, citizenship, of course, we commonly understand and conceptualise in terms of the relationship between citizen and state, such as it's embedded in sets of formal rights and obligations. However, a whole series of urban and political theorists, and we might be thinking of people like Joe Painter and Chris Philo, Engin Ison and James Holston, they've all been interested and shown a sort of growing interest in the city as a social and political space in which citizenship is both enacted and performed. So what I want to do in this talk is to think about the neighbourhood. The neighbourhood as a site where citizenship is practised and negotiated. And in particular, I want to explore how British Muslims living in Bradford have reacted to the arrival of new migrants from Eastern Europe into neighbourhoods that they have claimed as their own. So the research draws specifically on fieldwork that's associated with the Joseph Rowntree Foundation project that looked at Bradford, and particularly we focused on inner areas of Bradford, which are well and widely recognised by people in Bradford as being what we might call British Muslim community spaces. The team spread across universities. I did it under the auspices of University of Leeds, and one of my colleagues, Malcolm Harrison, was on the team, and we also worked with David Robinson, who's at Sheffield Hallam University. I know he gave a seminar here, I think, last term. Now, the aim of the talk, then, is to build on this notion of performative and lived space. So what I want to do is to think about how it is that in an era of growing international migration, of increasing social difference, that everyday negotiations between British Muslims and new migrants bring formal constructions of citizenship as status and the lived experience of citizenship and belonging to the fore, how they're brought together. And what the findings tend to highlight is how it is that urban social changes that arise from global processes can help shape established citizens' experiences of exclusion and belonging, I will argue, both at the local and the national scale. So what I want to do is start out then by thinking about this concept of urban citizenship that's in my title. So I'm taking then as my starting point the idea that citizenship can be variously conceptualised as status, practice and process. And such conceptualisations imply that while citizenship clearly has formal and legal expression, it's also socially constructed and embodied. So if we conceptualise citizenship then as an array of practices through which individuals and groups claim new rights or defend existing ones, then we can think of citizenship as being something that's highly contextualised and always in the making. It isn't just this sort of notion of the formal relationship between citizen and state. Cities, Engin Ison has argued, are places where the very meaning and content of citizenship is being constantly made and remade. And he points to city spaces like the neighbourhood as places where citizenship is lived and experienced and performed. Meanwhile, of course, we can see neighbourhoods as political spaces infused with claims to citizenship's rights through struggles for space and recognition and resources. Now, clearly, such understandings of group negotiations over entitlements have been encapsulated in the work of many urban and political theorists, and very often they've been inspired by Lefebvrean notions of the rights to the city. So we might think of the work here of Eleanor Kaufman, James Holston and others. And here we're thinking of conceptualising urban citizenship as something that invokes citizens' rights to, first of all, participate in the city, to have their voices heard, and also, very importantly, in the context of the way I'm thinking about the neighbourhood, is to think about how particular spaces can be appropriated for the use of particular groups to meet their needs. In Lefebvre's words, to habit and inhabit the city. Now, Lefebvre's ideas, of course, underpin a very rich vein of work on citizenship in the city, and particularly the notion of struggle. But we can argue that these ideas also have quite a lot of implications, I think, for understanding the everyday negotiations between minority groups and new migrants, as I want to explore in the context of this talk. So for British Muslims, in particular, we're thinking about their spaces, we can see that the struggle, this idea of appropriating certain urban spaces, is very much associated with a continuing struggle for security and belonging by group members. While this minority is clearly being accorded the formal rights of citizenship, we might argue that there's a lot of evidence to suggest that their substantive rights of citizenship are not always fully recognised. So, for example, we can draw on, particularly in the geographical as well as the migration literature, a wide cross-cutting literature which places Muslim citizens in marginal and precarious positions. So we might be thinking of the literature on segregation and integration, on cultural and religious difference, on Muslim minority experiences of the city. And we might think of the work of Peter Hopkins and Richard Gale in that respect. And all of this tends to reveal that if we take the group as a whole, that they're experiencing both social and cultural and indeed structural disadvantages. But in addition to that, they're clearly discursive constructions of Muslim otherness that serves to place members of these groups on the margins of the polity. All of this has tended to prompt what might argue are politicised debates here in Britain as well as in many other countries, particularly a number of European countries, about the conditions for and indeed the possibilities of British Muslim citizenship in the fullest sense of the word. Now, that having said we can construct British Muslim as a marginal subject, we also have to recognise that there's been a lot of work which is also starting to challenge and complicate this essentialised construction of the marginalised Muslim subject. What we're seeing is increasing interest in class differences and gender differences between Muslim citizens and their experiences, also very complex and contextualised understandings of Muslim belonging, and indeed increasingly understandings of the agency of British Muslims in the face of social and cultural liminality. Nevertheless, I think we would say it was clear from the accumulated work, and there's a lot of it now, that for many British Muslims, their place in the city, their sense of urban citizenship, is shaped by feelings and experiences of, at times, exclusion and certainly difficulties in accessing a whole wide range of spheres, such as jobs, housing, education, etc. And indeed, my own work has shown that for some, just moving through the city in itself can be problematic. They don't necessarily because of fear of harassment, because of challenges to claims on particular spaces for residents, they don't feel that they can necessarily have the freedom to move through city spaces in the way that other British citizens do. And clearly this has encouraged many to seek security and a sense of belonging, particular neighbourhoods in the city, and particularly that neighbourhoods that coincide with the inner city. Now, of course, the clustering of British Asian Muslims in particular, and here in the context of Bradford, we're talking about people drawn from Pakistan and Kashmir, that clustering of Muslims into distinctive community spaces has been very well documented, as has the social capital and sense of security that can be derived from them. And it might be argued that the resources that are inherent in these community spaces constitute an important part of a cultural landscape over which British Muslims, or some British Muslims, lay claim to, and over which they feel that in the face of insecurity, they have a measure of control, a measure of authority. And we might think of these spaces as home spaces, so that not only do they have a material expression, but they have an emotional sense of belonging and citizenship bound up with them. Clearly, the appropriation and transformation of particular urban spaces can help to provide a base from which to articulate and mobilise particular demands for recognition, mobilise the facilitation of the enactment of social and political rights, as well as it being clearly, very importantly, a place of belonging as well. And I think we would see that in many British Muslim communities living in inner city areas, that this is particularly important for Muslim women, some of whom, particularly in places like Bradford, still face a lot of constraints on mobility, both by custom and or lack of access to resources, economic resources. Now, in talking about these particular community spaces, in Bradford as elsewhere, of course, these spaces have always been ethnically diverse. I don't want to sort of enter into the sort of idea of the parallel lives debate that these are separated Muslim spaces. that don't have any connection with other groups. They're diverse spaces. They're often home to transient populations like asylum seekers and refugees. However, new labour migration from Eastern Europe has brought very rapid social change in some of these areas since 2004, with the beginnings of this migration. What we've seen is fairly large numbers of these new migrants settling in the relatively deprived spaces over a short period of time. So we have this sort of classic situation of a space with sort of overstretched resources already, new migrants coming in to those spaces. And just to contextualise that in terms of Bradford, drawing on the worker registration scheme statistics when they were available, we saw that between 2004 and 2007, the early years of migration, over 8,000 AIT migrants registered for work. We know that it's an underestimate of the numbers who were coming. Since then, of course, there's been a turnover of Eastern Europeans, but even the more recent statistics that we've got show that there were between 800 and 900 registering for work, and certainly more were coming. In Bradford, the newcomers from these groups contain disproportionate numbers of migrants from the Czech Republic and Slovak Republic, and quite large numbers of Roma families. And the Roma tend to migrate as families rather than necessarily individual migrants, and they tend to put down roots as well. While a number of the other migrants, some of the Polish migrants, are coming and going according to economic circumstances, more of the Roma have made it clear that their intention is to settle. And they're settling in these areas of deprivation. So this area here, which is bright red, actually depicts deprivation, multiple deprivation. But this coincides with what we would see as the main Muslim areas, Asian Muslim areas in Bradford. This is the main Bradford areas, that's Keithley. So you've got this combination of what is seen as Muslim spaces, cultural landscapes associated with this group, high levels of deprivation, and then new migrants settling in spaces that have been claimed by this other group. Significantly, the Bradford Muslim residents generally perceive the Eastern Europeans to be socially and culturally different from many of the earlier new arrivals, so from many of the other asylum seekers and refugees who've passed through their residential spaces. And it's a difference that has to be confronted in schools and in the neighbourhood and community centres on almost daily basis. Because these British Muslim community spaces in Bradford are far from transitional spaces, as far as many of the British Muslims are concerned. Many residents lack social and cultural and economic capital to move. Many feel very strong material and emotional attachments to those spaces. So they're not likely to see a transition as many of these new migrants come out. Some are moving out, but there's a core that is staying. Thus, as new Eastern European migrants claim presence in the city, claim presence in these neighbourhoods, the neighbourhood and the street, we could argue, become focal points for struggle between the new and settled groups. Struggle over space, struggle over ways of life, struggle over resources. And of course, there's a lot of research that we've seen that has documented the extent of localised conflict in the face of new migration to Britain. Although, as we also know, the scale and character of this varies quite considerably from place to place. Well, what we see is that there's certainly evidence from work by those such as Mary Hickman that tensions tend to be particularly acute in areas where there's a very strong sense of ownership of space by an established group. So the strong sense of ownership of the space by Muslims in Bradford. And so we might expect, perhaps, there to be greater tensions or some sort of resistance to groups who are perceived as different settling in their midst. We also know that those who feel least secure, whether we're thinking socially or economically, in their own citizenship, often have a strong impulse to draw boundaries between themselves and the new migrants in order to bolster their sense of identity and security and belonging. And we might, of course, look to the white working class who've done this, as well as more established minority ethnic groups, for example, the Polish population, who are not always as welcome as they might be assumed to be to the new migrants who are coming from their own country. So we know a lot about the impact of new migration, but despite the fact there's a strong body of work on this, particularly in the impact of migration on community relations and access to resources, what we see is that quite a lot of it fails to differentiate between groups that we might call the receiving population or the more subtle population. These groups are often treated almost quite as a homogenous category, when in fact, of course, there's a lot of variation within those settled residents, within the receiving population. And it's this that I want to start to unpick with relation to the reactions of the British Muslim population in Bradford. What it became clear in our research was that it was the established British Muslim population who was particularly unsettled by their encounters with the new Eastern European migrants. Much more so, it seemed, than the established white populations who were still living in these inner areas, or indeed the much smaller African Caribbean population who also had a history of a presence in these areas. So I'd like to explore that a bit further by looking at our project and what we did and what we found in Bradford. So first of all, just to explain briefly what we did for this project, because it was actually quite an all-embracing project, and what I'm talking about today is just one part of something that came out of it. The aims of the project were to examine the impact of new migration on community relations in three inner areas in Bradford, areas that widely associated and widely recognised as being partly associated with the city's Muslim population. And a central concern of the project was to evaluate the potential to build bridges between new incoming groups, such as the Eastern European migrants, and settled populations through intercultural dialogue. And we were specifically using community forums to precipitate this dialogue. So the research itself was actually underpinned by the contact hypothesis, rooted in the social psychology and reconciliation literature, and of course a number of you will be familiar with the very influential work of Miles Huston in this respect. And so the project and what happened in the forums and the nature of the intercultural dialogue has been evaluated in our report to the Joseph Rowntree Foundation. And I'm not actually specifically going to talk about that today, but very happy to talk about it if people are interested. The whole process of bringing groups together, new migrants and more settled groups, was a very challenging one and also a very interesting one in terms of some of the outcomes. What we did was to use mixed methods and participatory approaches as far as possible to explore the impact of new migration and ways to reconcile concerns through a number of different strategies. So first of all, we engaged in community consultations with new and settled residents in our particular areas. We asked people about how the neighbourhood was changing, what their concerns were, etc. And we drew in, by going to community centres, a wide range of British Muslim residents as well as others, and indeed Eastern European migrants as well. And what these consultations revealed was that there were some very obvious tensions around newness, around differences in lifestyle between the Eastern European migrants and the British Muslims in particular. We then used focus groups to build on those findings and then took the key outcome from that process into the discussion forums, which brought together new and settled residents in the process of dialogue. And what we did was we aimed to allow the residents to explore their concerns around neighbourhood and community relations in the course of those forums. Most of the residents who came had not met anybody from the other group at any time, so we invited them to ask each other questions, which allowed them to explore their concerns, their misconceptions, and to explore ways of improving daily life, so it was to have a positive outcome. And residents were invited to participate in one of four forums that we held, and held locally. There were two which were specifically for women, and you can see a photograph of one of the ones held there. There was one that was mixed gender and mixed ages, and there was another one which we held with young men, which we engaged the young men through a photographic project first, where they took photographs of their neighbourhood and the community, and we used the photographs as a means of facilitating discussion. Engaging young men in a forum was no mean feat, but it proved very interesting when it came to seeing the nature of the dialogue they had between them and how they perceived each other and where they felt there were possible areas of convergence and where there was divergence. We then followed all this up with some in-depth interviews, which allowed us to talk to the forum participants about their experiences of the dialogue in the forum, what their expectations have been, what they felt the outcomes were. What we had done was invite a wide range of residents from settled groups, and we talked about settled groups as groups that have been living in the area distinctly for 10 years or more. But it was the British Muslims who were best represented in the forums and who were most vociferous in the forums amongst the settled groups. It was very clear that the new diversity that was arising from Eastern European migration had brought a whole series of challenges for these residents, for their everyday lives, and also that it was raising concerns about their own position, about their own sense of identity as a minority group when they were confronting this difference. So these are the things that we found rather interesting as one of the byproducts of this work on intercultural dialogue. And I'd just like to explore this a little bit further. First of all, by thinking about British Muslims' attachment to particular spaces, then thinking about the nature of their encounters with Eastern Europeans, and then to use this to reflect on understandings of Muslim self and how it is that all of this helped Muslims understand something, I think, and reflect perhaps on their own sense of identity as British citizens. So to start out just then on the sense of place attachment or and their understandings of appropriation of particular spaces in the language that we've been using. It's quite clear, I think, from this project and also from the fact I've done work in Bragg for about 10 years on a series of different projects, that the community spaces of Bradford's inner city provide an emotional tether, I might say, an emotional tether for local Muslim sense of citizenship, both as rights and experience. And I think we could say that the symbolic and material connections to these spaces cut across gender, they cut across age, and to a certain extent, class differences. We found that both younger and older men and women imagine these inner areas as their own. And so we have the sort of quote, yes, it's our place, and then using the vernacular, it's Bradistan, and that was the term that was more likely to be used by the young people. But nevertheless, there's just a sense of connection. And when I refer to community spaces, or what we might call home spaces, I'm grounding it in what interviews really defined as Muslim spaces themselves. So they're fluid spaces, they're subjective spaces, but they were materialised through these very distinctive cultural landscapes that many would recognise, many Bradfordians would recognise. And they're sites, I would argue, of both citizenship claims and citizenship performances for a marginalised group who has struggled to establish their own rights as political and social citizens, as a group that's marginalised and struggled. Now, of course, British Muslim affiliations in Bradford, as anywhere else, and their sense of identification stretches well beyond these bounded spaces of the inner city. Many groups live beyond these spaces, many of the group live beyond the spaces, they live out in the suburbs, but nevertheless, it was quite clear from talking to them that they felt they connected to those spaces in some sense. Some connected physically, actually visited there a lot or lived there a lot, others felt they connected emotionally to them. So even though they didn't live there, they liked the idea of them being there, they felt they were important for their sense of identity, for the identity of their people in Bradford. So what we see is something of a notion of an imaginal community on the ground, which is grounded through place. What we saw, that this sense of an imagined community actually cohered more strongly in the face of perceived challenges from newcomers. So what we saw in our interviews was that people started talking about this appropriation space, talked about we're strong here, we've done all right here, and this notion of it's ours, there's this sort of claiming a place where they could be themselves. There was also a notion of the history of struggle, the fact that the spaces that were now seen as theirs and claimed as theirs had been hard won. And young men in particular were talking quite a lot about this history of struggle and felt very resentful in many cases about newcomers coming in and trying to change the character of those spaces. And they talked a lot about stories and memories that were associated with what it had been like for their parents, the notion of the battle and how they should remember how it had been. Now, not all young people wanted to live there. Some were very ambivalent about these spaces. Some wanted to live further away because they saw the heart of the community space as very constraining. But nevertheless, they were still describing this very strong emotional attachment to this notion of home space. And this notion of, again, our place, it's associated with ideas of safety, and very often it's gendered. It's linked to ideas of women being able to walk the streets without fear. Now, as Alan and husband, who've done a lot of work in Bradford, have also observed, British Muslims' population now in Bradford demonstrates what we might call growing confidence in itself. It's a confidence that's rooted in the delivery of political and civic and social rights of citizenship through grassroots organisations in these spaces, through a lot of welfare support in these spaces. Is also recognised for increasing political recognition, and a number of that, much of that comes from these spaces as well, and also the notion of a sort of rootedness in a particular place. And interviewees particularly spoke of this sort of increasing recognition, even though they felt they were seen as a marginalised population, that in Bradford at least, they were feeling they'd come of age. And so people use quotes like, we can be ourselves, we can have our say, Asian people do get listened to more now. Although some did acknowledge that some voices, some Muslim voices in the community were much louder than others. But nevertheless, there was a sense of sort of a recognition of this group. However, interviews' accounts were also tainted with the idea that the everyday practice of citizenship was still found in some ways to be wanting. So there was still a sense of persistent marginality that really pervaded in a number of accounts. So they talked about poverty and unemployment. They talked as well about the intrusive practices associated with the state's anti-terrorism and discourse strategy, security strategy. So discourses around terror, etc., that implicated Muslims. So the prevent agenda in the past, contest the agenda now. In addition, the recent scale of immigration from Eastern Europe has clearly been perceived as a particular threat to these home spaces. As a result, as I said, the bonds of an imagined community have been strengthened. They've been strengthened by circulating narratives of difference. It's about this difference trying to claim a presence in the neighbourhood that was said by one man, but it's by people not understanding our ways. Now, these accounts of neighbourhood change that we came across when we were doing our forum discussions and in the focus groups and interviews, the accounts of neighbourhood change did suggest there was almost an apparent openness to ideas of new diversity and difference. And we certainly heard about acts of individual hospitality towards newcomers. I'm not saying it's all about difference, it's all about closing down the boundaries. We also heard during our forum discussions what we might call some expressions of empathy by British Muslims for the Eastern Europeans and their plight. They recognised that economic migrants, in fact, they were going through very similar sorts of trajectories to those that had been experienced by their own parents. Many of them had been unaware of the poverty that the new migrants were living in, of the very difficult circumstances that they were living in. And so there were moments of connection, certainly, in some of the forum discussions, as there was a learning about these new circumstances. Nevertheless, it was still also apparent there was a very widespread unease about the new arrivals, and this was marked by avoidance by many and overt street tensions for some, particularly amongst the young men, as you could imagine. So some spoke about their anger and resentment towards new migrants. Now, interestingly, these animosities very rarely framed, as we might have expected, in terms of unwelcome competition over material resources. So they weren't framed in terms of competition over jobs, competition over housing. Of much greater apparent concern were the social and the cultural and religious differences that intruded into everyday life. And these tensions circulated around three key areas: civility, respect, and alcohol consumption. In terms of civility and ideas of civility, many of the British Muslims' complaints about newcomers really echoed those that were commonly levelled at new migrants by established residents. So, for example, there were lots of concerns about rubbish, about littering, about urinating in the street, about unruly children. And this public discourse of incivility circulated freely and widely, and it evoked very strong emotional reactions. And these reactions were almost a sort of revulsion, disgust amongst this population. And it was almost seen as that it was a pollution of this home space. It was very interesting. You couldn't even get into a taxi in these areas, and many of the taxis, all the taxis seemed to be driven by local Asians, and you only had to say something about the neighbourhood, and it almost triggered this invective about this change in their area. So these were very widely circulating discourses. Others went even further and started pointing to apparent lapses in morality and respect by newcomers through different behaviour codes and dress codes, for example. So British Muslim men in particular were apt to claim that their space and their women were being violated by what they called rough talk, by lewd remarks. Another one referred to the scantily dressed Eastern European women on the streets. And some suggested that this lack of morality, this lack of respect, had curtailed the freedom of their women. Before, they were talking about women were free to move through these streets in the spaces they've made their own. Now they were saying that had been curtailed because of the lack of respect, and particularly that the religiously observant Muslim women were not coming out. Some said they're not coming out because the women are standing around in their bikinis, presumably only in the summer. So what we're seeing then is some sort of perceived violation, a sort of violation of self, a violation of home space. And it was seen by a number of those who we interviewed, but particularly the men, as to impinge upon their sense of entitlement to live freely as Muslims in areas over which they had claimed ownership, a sort of strong sense of ownership. And for many, the sort of feelings of sort of defilement of body and space were heightened by disapproval of alcohol consumption. This conspicuous alcohol consumption in the streets in the summer months. And again, it was claimed half-dressed young men were drinking from bottles and cans in the streets. So there's both this lack of respect as well as the consumption of alcohol. Here, not only were residents being, notably all residents, were unhappy about noise and occasional street disturbances, but also it was also negative reaction to the public displays that were seen as offensive, the displays of drinking in the street. Seen as an offensive and seen as an infringement, one could argue, of normative codes of behaviour in a public space that had been appropriated and constructed and claimed as Muslim. Undoubtedly, some of the women we talked to had withdrawn from the streets, and they did talk quite a lot about fear and about anxiety. So some of the women had withdrawn, but some of the young men, meanwhile, had taken to patrolling the streets and indulging in acts of name-calling and street clashes with young Eastern European migrants. And these clashes involved a sort of abuse and harassment of young Eastern European women than more overt clashes with the young men. In these instances, we see the perceived differences becoming manifest, the boundaries between the groups being enforced through displays of masculinity. This moving through the streets clearly brought some sort of surveillance and policing, but it was also an assertion of ownership, one could argue, an ownership of these local public spaces, a declaration of entitlement, of Muslim entitlement to be there. And interestingly, the dominant discourse around the need for defence by young men was rooted in a gendering of the home space. A number justified their actions in terms of the need to make their streets safer for our women. However, we could argue, of course, it was also a performance that could be understood more widely about a defence and a reclaiming of spaces, both physical space and a cultural space, for the wider community, for the containment of a difference that was seen to appear to threaten that community. We might therefore see perhaps the street practices as a materialisation of emotional feelings about the community spaces, these spaces I've called as home spaces. Now, we did also come across the fact that young men's clashes could also have been, to a certain extent, turf wars over drugs. Drugs clearly were one of the modes of economic exchange in this area. This wasn't something we were able to pursue in any way, but we shouldn't feel that this wasn't a part of it too. but nevertheless, the way in which it's also talked about in these narratives was something about we could relate to social and cultural difference. So what about all of this in relation to understandings of Muslim self, which is one of the points I raised early on? Well, importantly, I think I would argue that these performances that we see on the streets, the sense of difference, some of the emotions that have been revealed about newcomers coming into these areas, are as much about the British Muslims' understanding of themselves as their views of the Eastern European migrants. The arrival of Eastern Europeans in their midst have prompted them to reflect on their own sense of citizenship, their own sense of belonging, both at the local and the national scale, I think you could argue. So, in line with Alim and Husband's conclusions, I think, we saw that our discussions with young Muslims in particular certainly revealed, again, this idea of confidence and pride about young Muslims facing the city. So at the local level, there was great confidence. However, the Eastern Europeans' presence clearly had also exposed some uncertainties about Muslim citizenship and belonging, particularly at the national scale, I think. And there were several key themes which we have here, that were interwoven into Muslims' accounts of change in the neighbourhood and the community and their encounters with the new arrivals. The first one was around mobility and how the British Muslims referred to the ease with which Eastern Europeans could cross national borders, the ease with which they migrated to Britain. They were able to settle in a particular space in Bradford, and the way in which they also Eastern Europeans could move through city spaces. And they put that up in relation to themselves, where they felt they were constrained, they felt they encountered barriers. And there were some comments made about, you know, if only our women could walk through the city centre in the way in which Eastern Europeans do. So we could argue that their understanding of their own urban citizenship was partly unsettled by the performances of these sort of more mobile bodies of the Eastern Europeans. There are also references to the persistence of otherness. For many young Muslims in particular, there was a very strong sense of having moved on. There was a strong sense that they were no longer precarious as their parents had been in the past. Their economic position was much better. They talked about, we're doing all right now. But there was also a feeling of otherness that pointed to the boundaries between Muslim self and non-Muslim mainstream. This, of course, is historically constituted, but it's also being re-inscribed, we might argue, through encounters with what might be perceived as a new and more potentially assimilable minority. So it was putting themselves in relation to others, understanding that, and then seeing their own difference more sharply. Several pointed to the absence of religious difference for the Eastern Europeans, and they saw this as fundamental to ideas of national belonging and thus felt they would much more easily settle down and assimilate. Very few referred explicitly to racialized boundaries. Much more, there was the sort of notions of community bonds, the feelings of otherness were framed in terms of religious difference. And this was encapsulated in the quote by one young man who said, "I'd like people to respect my religion and who I am. I'd like people to respect me as a British Muslim." So again, there was sort of this sense of still being on the margins, still being constructed as an other. In the accounts, of course, there were still also references, as I mentioned earlier, particularly by young men, to the everyday enactment of politicised discourses on Islamic difference. So some made it very clear that their own place in the city, but more importantly, their own place in the nation, and their sense of citizenship tended to be unsettled still by the sort of post-9/11, post-7/7 era. So they referred to plenty of examples of Islamophobia, again to negative media representations, though Brad has gone a long way in trying to rectify that locally. But also they saw these intrusive, everyday nature of the state counter-terrorism initiatives as being symptomatic of their marginality. There was also resentment that they described themselves as sort of good citizens, of having settled down, has made every attempt to integrate, and they felt resentful in their own eyes because they felt that new Eastern European migrants were getting away with everything, in their words. So for some, there was this growing confidence in Britishness, growing confidence in a sense of local belonging, but it seemed to be undermined by what we might call the pervasive effects of marginalising state discourses, marginalising practices that point to a vulnerability and a conditionality for British Muslim citizenship and belonging. And interestingly, Peter Hopkins' work with young men in Glasgow has pointed out very similar sorts of feelings in that particular context. So in conclusion, I think we can say that localised urban social changes associated with global migration can be seen to challenge and seen to expose a vulnerable minority group's complex sense of citizenship and belonging. In the course of our research with the inner-city residents, we saw how discursive resources were employed alongside embodied performances to help cement the idea of Muslim spaces and to delineate boundaries between Muslim citizen and other. Now, I should stress that I think these boundaries were permeable, and it was interesting in the forum discussions and the interviews with groups is that women in particular saw them more likely to be permeable than the young men. The women flagged up a number of what they saw as possibilities for engagement with new migrants, though they set a number of conditions on this. Whereas young men, though at one point they seemed to want that engagement, you saw them retreat very quickly from it. I think we can say that such encounters with difference reveal the lived experience and social relatedness of British Muslims' sense of urban citizenship and have implications for the positioning, for the identity of Muslim self in relation to the wider polity. I think by focusing on the claiming of and negotiations over home space, we can conceptualise local contestations both as political claims in terms of rights, but also as emotional claims that engender a sense of security and belonging for a group that has struggled to establish their social and political rights as citizens at the national scale and the local scale, but they're making more progress at the local scale. And importantly, I would argue that I think through this sort of research, we see the importance of the neighbourhood. The neighbourhood as a site of struggle, a site of negotiation, and specifically as a social and emotional and a political space of citizen formation. Thank you.